on Irish Golfer Podcast coming at you here. Ronan McNamara in the hot seat today, and I'm delighted to be joined by the Western Warrior, Mark McGowan. Mark, how are you getting on?
All right, Ronan. Seems like the people have spoken and we're going as a two ball.
Well, we had great success with it last year, so this was long overdue in my opinion.
Yeah, where is Pete this week anyway? He's off in some far-flung destination, is he?
Some far-flung destination across from me in the office here. He's gallivanting and fluting around. You know yourself. Mark, look, we've a big week this week and you're in Sligo for more reasons than one. It's not just because you live there. You're going to go across the road for us and cover the Connolly Motors West of Ireland Championship this week. I'm sure as you look out your window there at the lovely dark clouds, have you got your Wellington boots, got your waterproofs ready to go?
It's actually not the worst day in the world here. It is slightly wet, but compared to the pretty much all 5 days we had last year, this is a great weather. I think the forecast for the week is sketchy. Let's say, fingers crossed that God smiles upon us and gives us a little bit of clear daylight. I'm not holding my breath.
How long are you a member there now? Is it 2 years now you're there?
Well, last year was my first, yeah, so.
So you're into your second year. So you should be an expert at this stage. Like, you should be going out now on the Friday morning and asking fellas, do they need a caddy? Members' knowledge
well,
and all
I mean,
that.
Look, I mean, I don't know if they could afford me, to be honest. Last year I was pretty much seeing the course for the first time, more or less, of the week of it. I've actually even played a ton of winter golf this year, which is the first time I've ever done that. So, yeah, I'm very, very well up on exactly what's out there. So, yeah, look, if anybody wants a few pointers on how to get round and how to get a winning score, you know, I'm available.
Give Mark a call. He'll be there Friday to Tuesday. And he's cheap as well. So before we kick things off on this podcast, we'll just park the amateur stuff to one side. Today's pod is sponsored by Flowgas, making greens greener. These guys do fantastic things for all levels of Irish golf, whether it be sponsoring tour players or even sponsoring some of our amateur events. So we'll kick the West just to one side for a little while, and we'll kick into PGA Tour champions, because we have another Irish winner. That's now a seven-time winner on the Champions Tour at just 52 years of age. It's, of course, none other than the legend themselves, Padraig Harrington. And Mark, I think it's fair to say this was a real trademark Padraig Harrington win.
Absolutely. As Harrington wins go, this was as Harrington a win as they come. What a man. Like, he's just absolutely box office material for any time he's near the leaderboard or near the top of the leaderboard in a tournament, because you know it's not gonna be straightforward. He's gonna do it the hard way, and yeah, he certainly did it the hard way this week. He's a national treasure. We're so fortunate in this country to have an ambassador for the game like Harrington, and just anybody. I mean, I don't think it was available to watch here unless you were like utilizing an old dodgy streaming service, which I can neither confirm nor deny that I was, but it was fantastic to see.
Absolutely brilliant. Like, classic Harrington, the double bogey on 16. You know, tournament's over, you're done, you've blown it again, Paddy. It's like back in the old days. And birdie finish, 14 under par. And even the putt on the last birdie, like, it's, that putt's just not going in the hole. But somehow, as he always seems to, he just kind of wills it in, and the teeth are clenched and the fist pump's going 90 and it's all over then all of a sudden. Like, it was just a throwback to, like, the Harrington of yesteryear back in his heyday.
Yeah, I think the winning putt did the full lap of honor of the hole before dropping. As soon as he'd won, he was interviewed more or less, like, before the interviewer pretty much was on the green, but then 30 seconds of him shaking hands, and he was talking, and he just talked, like, he said, you know, he never does it easy. He says, like, his best, you know, his best stuff comes out whenever he's faced with a difficult challenge. He says, like, the, you know, when he's got an easy shot in front of him, he's at his absolute worst. He says, but whenever it's like his back's to the wall, that's when he's at his best. And that's exactly the way it was. I mean, to double bogey 16, which, I mean, the double bogey came out of nowhere as well. He'd been playing like really, really solid. Missed a shortish enough eagle putt on 15, just pulled the putt a little bit low. But like, you know, this is going to be routine. And it was anything but to regroup after the double bogey and suddenly go on one down, like, to birdie the next two, and the birdie on the par 3 17th. So he birdied it all three rounds. It's by no means an easy hole. Jimenez, that was playing along with him, bogeyed it, but his shot was just right over, you know, just slightly left of the flag, exactly where you want to play it to, and a 20-footer downhill roughly that just, I mean, it just died in the front door. It was fantastic. I mean, I was sitting watching. I was like, if Harrington, it was pretty late. I was like, if Harrington wins this, I'm gonna have to bang out the report on it right away. If he loses, you know, I could probably wait till morning. And so once he double bogeyed, I was like, pretty much getting set for bed. As soon as that birdie putt dropped, I was like, I am definitely not getting an early night tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Some leaderboard as well. Like, it was like a throwback to an old European tour event with Tung Chai, JD, and Miguel Angel Jimenez. Like, it's funny, it's brilliant to see Harrington winning again, because he had his battles with pneumonia and a collapsed lung over the winter, and that really did kind of curtail the early part of his season. Like, he had a lot of starts on the two main tours and never really kind of got to show his best self. And now he's playing in the Houston Open in Texas this week. Only Irishman in the field, and you'd back him to put on another good show, and he seems to be back to himself. Swing speed is up. He's hitting the ball a mile again. Like, so he's definitely out the other side of his health issues.
Yeah, and he's back shooting crazy videos on the range before going out to play start the tournament. I'm sure most people listening to this have probably seen him trying to emulate Scottie Scheffler with the dancing feet before hitting the ball. It was again classic Harrington. You had if you watch the video, then there's like all the rest of the players in the range behind him are stopped. They aren't hitting shots. They're just like staring at him, all kind of thinking, "Is like, what is this crazy lad up to?" So yeah, right back, classic Harrington.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Moving on to the PGA Tour as well, we had Seamus Power. It didn't quite happen for him on the final day, but before we get into that, Peter Menotti picked up his first win since 2015 at the Valspar. And look, I think probably going to be interview of the year, would you say, Mark, after that one?
You hear a lot, there's a lot of stuff talked about how it's all about money for golfers and everything. And even though he did pick up a check for $1.5 million, which incidentally is more than he's ever earned in any of the previous 9 years playing on the PGA Tour, this 1 week alone is gonna top anything he's earned in any one individual season. But I mean, money was far from his mind. I mean, he was like, the emotional walls just completely crumbled. And you just see how much it meant to him. The interview was fabulous. And I mean, he talked about, you know, how it's gotten much tougher out there as well. Like, he's a 36 year old. He's pretty much the quintessential journeyman PGA Tour pro, and I don't mean that in any sort of a derogatory way, because I mean, if you keep your card for 9 years playing on the PGA Tour, like, you are an absolutely superb golfer, and it's an incredible achievement in itself. But just the way he broke down, the way he talked about how he didn't know if he would ever get another win, you know, about how, like, you know, how it's a struggle week to week, trying to trying to balance. I mean, he plays a really heavy schedule. Last year, he played 35 times. And that was without any major appearances. If you think the likes of your Scheffler and McIlroy and those guys probably played like 22, 23 PGA Tour tournaments, including the four majors. He is playing double the regular PGA Tour tournaments that they are playing. So, yeah, I mean, to be out there fighting for your career, fighting for your job, with a family to balance and everything, it is an extremely tough life. But even though it's fantastic, and the people see like weeks like this and think it's the best thing in the world, and it is the best thing in the world. But then the others on the flip side, they don't see the grind. They don't see the weeks where you turn up, you miss the cut, you're on to the next place, you don't see your family, all of those things. But yeah, he's not a winner that's gonna do great things for
he's not going to do great things
a little bit
for
underwhelming
viewing figures or nothing. No, he's not. You mentioned it there. It's another poor, it was a really, really poor event that's kind of been glossed over by another sort of feel-good story winner. Like, we've had any amount of them this year. The quality, I thought, was absolutely shocking throughout the final round from almost everybody, including Peter. He did top a shot on his way around. In the couple of hours I watched were just horrendous. But I think we need to have a little bit of a conversation about Cam Young as well, because as much as Peter Malati went out and won it, and it's great to see him win, Cameron Young, if ever you were going to have a chance, surely that was it, Mark. He was tied for the lead with two holes to go. And then what he did in the 18th was, almost unforgivable. Leaving a birdie putt, what was it, 9-10 feet short? You end up three putting to miss out by two. This guy's got a problem.
Yeah, I mean, the tee shot was miles left. This wasn't one that just missed the fairway or was unlucky to find a bad position. He was extremely fortunate with the tee shot that it stayed in bounds and that he had any kind of a shot. And in fairness, he did play a fantastic second shot to get it onto the green. But yeah, as you said, I mean, the birdie putt was miles short, and the par putt then, I mean, yeah, it's 9 or 10 feet, but it was a 9 or 10 footer that was never going in. It never had a chance. It missed the hole by about probably 3 inches sliding past. It is concerning. I mean, because we've all talked about it, we know the potential he has. We've been fortunate enough to hear Paul McBride talking about being a college, but I'm seeing up close in Dubai when he caddied for him earlier this year, seeing how much he'd progressed and everything, and he's an absolutely sublime talent. But he's having serious problems getting over the line, and we've seen this with other players before. Some players have made that breakthrough and made that breakthrough win and then gone on to win several times. Others have never done it. And, there's only so many years you can keep plugging away without getting the wins, without getting those rewards, because the doubts are going to set in. And once they set in, they tend to set in across all facets of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. And just quickly to touch on Seamus Power, I thought we'd be coming in here today waxing lyrical about a win that would get him into the Masters, but unfortunately it wasn't to be. Final round 76 to finish in a share of 26th position. It's really one that kind of got away in the end for him. When you look at the world rankings, it looked like at the minimum he was going to break back into the top 100, but he's actually dropped from 103 to 105. Just never happened at all. He was nervy from the off. Probably it's fair to say that himself and Keith Mitchell teeing off in the final group together just dragged each other down to the bottom of the ocean. One of us is going to go. We're both going to drown together here. I gave up when I think he dropped a shot on the 7th or 8th hole. I was right, that's all she wrote. But on the positive note, Mark, it it's good to see him back. Like, he's been playing solidly in a lot of big events this year, and he to see him hold a 54-hole lead after being injured for so long, it was good. Like, it's good to see him playing well again.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to take the positives from this. We're gonna sound like Peter here now, being overly positive. But I mean, Seamus hasn't been in contention at a PGA Tour tournament since he won in Bermuda. What are we talking, like, nearly 18 months ago now? It's a tough situation. It's a tough golf course. The wind was whipping up. It is a place where once things start getting away from you, they can get away pretty fast. And yeah, as you said, Mitchell and himself seem to really drag each other down. The day before, Power had been playing along with Justin Thomas, who had a horrific day as well. Now, Power managed to keep it together and get himself into the final group. But that was 2 days in a row where he was playing along with somebody that was just self-destructing on the course. So unfortunately, on day two, he wasn't able to rise above it. But over the course of the week, I mean, he didn't do anything spectacularly well. He was just really, really solid with every aspect. Putted very well in round one, and the rest of his stats were really good. Hit his irons, or his approach game was really good on round three, and everything else was really solid. But then, just on the final day, everything was poor. I mean, he didn't drive it well. He didn't hit his approach as well. He was poor around the green, and he putted terribly. So that is a list of ingredients that are only going to see you go one way on a leaderboard, and that's down like a stone.
Yeah, no, that's not what you want. And in fairness, Keith Mitchell, he has a bit of a reputation for letting the shoulders droop a little bit after a poor start. But just going back to what you said about Justin Thomas, like, this was a remarkable day on the greens for JT. So he ended up taking 38 putts during his third round. He holed just 22 feet, 10 inches worth of putts, made 7 bogeys and a double to post an 8-over-79. It was the worst score of his year so far by 4 shots, and the highest number since first round 82 at the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool last summer, which I'm sure a lot of people have re-familiarized themselves with after watching an episode of Full Swing. Like, for JT, probably not what you want with the Masters just around the corner, but like, he is a bit of a streaky putter, to put it, you know, kindly to him. He's not a great putter, really.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the stats in his game were well down last year, but putting was the most concerning one. I mean, he probably struggled as much on the greens last year as Scottie Scheffler did. It's just that he wasn't striking it fantastically tee to green and doing everything but putting well. So, I definitely wouldn't be going back in Justin Thomas to win at Augusta at the moment, anyway. Interestingly as well, that so in the strokes since the ShotLink data came in, it was like the 35th worst putting round ever recorded, and there's been over 240,000 rounds measured in that. So when you're in the bottom 35 out of 240,000, that's a pretty bad place to be.
No, it's not ideal. But look, 25-1 for the Masters. Lump on it. Let's go. So LPGA Tour as well, Mark. We had another close week for Leona Maguire. T13, not a great weekend. Rounds of 72, kind of knocked her out of contention. Like, she was flying high through 36 holes. Just seems at the moment, like, looking through her results so far, not quite putting the 4 rounds together as of yet.
Yeah, and in many ways, I mean, they're completely different styles of player, but there's a lot of parallels you can kind of draw between her and Rory McIlroy's play this year, and that we've often seen these tournaments where there's been like one really good round and then three very average at best, and, well, by their standards, probably quite poor rounds. And that was, I mean, we saw, it was the same thing in Saudi Arabia when you were over following the Aramco. Again, similar again this week. Just not quite, I mean, she's just not quite firing on all cylinders at the moment. I mean, it was a tough, again, it was a tough golf course, tough and very windy conditions. And she wasn't able to put the ball in the fairway enough. I mean, we all, like, she's not the longest player, so hitting fairways and then hitting greens on the off the back of that is, like, obviously the strength of her game. When she's not hitting the fairway off the tee, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on the rest of her game. And she just, yeah, she missed too many fairways and then way too many greens off the back of that. So, I mean, will she be concerned? I'd say she's probably a little bit concerned that she's not rounding into the form that she would have been expecting. I mean, we do have, like, the Chevron Championship coming up a few weeks down the line. So, I mean, she could go out and have a good week this week and suddenly be, like, arriving at the first major of the year in, you know, with her game in great shape. So it's not overly concerning, but it's not ideal at the moment.
Yeah, she's more time to turn it around than McIlroy does at the moment anyway, which is a good sign. Now, look, her goal this year is to peak for the five majors and the Olympics. And the Chevron's a major she hasn't got a great record at anyway. So you'd wonder, maybe with it being in April, is that kind of before the era she wants to peak at? But no, like, it's good to see her with a finish of T13. Like, it wasn't the greatest weekend in the world for her, but, like, there is plenty of, you know, good stuff in there. As you mentioned, it is a little bit like Rory McIlroy. Like, it's just about putting it all together. And just a quick note on the winner, it was, of course, Nelly Korda. She beat Ryan O'Toole in a playoff. Both players were tied on 9-under par to win the Fairhill Serie Pack Championship. She's going well. She's had a bad year last year, but she's now off the mark now with a couple of wins. Like, you'd expect her to be, speaking of peaking for the five majors and the Solheim and the Olympics, like, she'd be a front runner for all of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how many major championships does she have? Is it just the one? I think
just the one. I think
and the Olympic gold. But I mean, she was, so it looked at one point like Nelly was going to kind of, you know, start to become a real dominant figure in women's golf. And then, I mean, she was unfortunate that she, like, had a blood clot. Like, she got a blood clot in her arm. I think it was early last year, and it was around this time last year, I think she had to pull out of the first major. And, you know, it took her a long while to really get back. But I mean, that's her second win this year. She's back to number one in the world. She's top of the rankings. She's got like every single weapon. I mean, she hits it miles, comparative to the rest of the field. And I mean, when she's reading off victories at the rate that she's currently reading them off, you'd be surprised if she doesn't take one of the big five or the big six, I guess, with the Olympics this year. You'd definitely be surprised if she doesn't put her name on one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, world number one again. You have to admire her for it. Moving on to a bit of the amateur stuff now, Mark. It's a big week for Irish amateur golf. The season really kind of starts here. West of Ireland, Connolly Motors at West of Ireland in Ross's Point or County Sligo Golf Club, depending on where you stand on that one. Plenty of big names heading to Ben Bulbin this week. But before we dive into all things West of Ireland, I caught up with 2021 champion Hugh Foley a few weeks back just to talk about the season upcoming. Is back in 2022, he was the first man since Darren Clark in 1990 to win both the North and South of Ireland titles in one year to take his current major tally to four. And unfortunately, last year wasn't really his year. A winless season. He missed out on the Walker Cup. He lost his Irish place. So he'll be teaming up on Friday, eager to prove point that he's probably still the man to beat in Ireland. And we have a few minutes here of you just for all of you to listen.
Definitely hungry for playing well and trying to win. And yeah, I'll just kind of piece together the season, play Australia, and then hopefully get to play a few more Irish championships. I'd love to. And you know, the goal was to turn pro this year. Haven't played the Walker Cup. That didn't happen. So you have to kind of adapt and change your plans, I think, rather than just go for the same plan without having ticked some of the boxes. So yeah, the goal next year is to put a season together and really just get better. Like I said, not worry about teams and just get better. And with that, hopefully comes chances to win and hopefully get to play a few more Irish events. I love playing in the courses that we play, and I'd love to win again. I think everyone would love to win. But overseas as well, I think that's a big thing. You know, a lot of the guys out there on tour, you look at their records and, they won at home, but they won away as well. So that's the aim of the game. You're traveling every week and trying to bring good golf with you. And hopefully I can do that, have a chance to win, you know, whatever it is, the Scottish Am, the Brabazon, any of these things, just go and play and try and win rather than, just making cuts.
Yeah, would you like to win the Irish Am this year? I know it's in Ross's Point where you won the West there previously. Like, what are your thoughts on the move there? And like, I suppose from your point of view, it'd be a great chance to win it because you've threatened to win the Irish Am over the last few years, but it's just not quite happened for you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I like Ross's. It was my first. I came seventh in the Irish Am there in 2018 or 19, whenever it was there. And that definitely kicked me on. So I like it. May is a bit friendlier than March or April playing the West. So it's a great place. I love it. Stay with cousins of the Keelings, the Arnolds, and I love going there. I love the clubhouse and the atmosphere and everything. In terms of internationals, it's a little bit of a trek for them across to the West, but it's doable. So hopefully we get a good field. And if ever you're asking, would you like to win something? I'd say, yeah, it doesn't matter what it is. So it'd be great. Yeah, the closest I came was the European Club. And I have a dig at Peter O'Keefe every time I think about it. But it'd be great to, of course, win your National Open. Yeah, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, we've mentioned the quality of the golf course before in conversation throughout the year. Like, we really do have some fantastic links golf courses in particular. And it feels like the eyes of those amateur golf are going to be in Ireland next year with the amateur championship coming to Ballyliffin. You've got the 2024 Women's Amateur in Portmarnock, Palmer Cup in Lahinch. Like, it's a great chance for us to get some real international world-class events onto Ireland and, showcase our great golf course, because we really do have brilliant championship golf course, as you well know by playing on the schedule.
Yeah, the courses are brilliant, and to play them on a schedule is we're so lucky. You chat to the guys in Scotland and England, and Scotland have Muirfield now, but it's the first time they've had their national championship at like a really top course in a while. I think it just attracts the field straight away, and to have all of ours on great courses, chatting to the English guys and Welsh guys and Scottish guys, like, they're always keen on coming over, and you do see it. Like, James Claridge won the West last year. That's just from lads chatting to them, saying how good the courses are compared to what they play. So we're very lucky in that regard. And Ross's is a beast of a course off the championship tees. It's well over 7,000, so it's a proper test. It just depends on what weather we get up there for May. But and Ballyliffin, when that came out, I was kicking myself because I was going to be pro in my head and miss it. But I'm definitely looking forward to that now. Again, that's a real beast during the summer when the rough is up, and that'll be amazing.
Yeah, and I'm sure obviously you want to go and win that, but like, it's really exciting to have, the best amateurs coming to Ireland, and I'm sure yourself and a lot of the Irish boys will be, chomping at the bit to, go and try and win the amateur. Like, there must be a bit of an extra incentive there for the lads to go and try get one over the line there.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, to have the Amateur Open in Donegal, it's brilliant county, brilliant golf. And we played the Home to Nationals there on the old course. I've played a few scratch cups on the Glashidi, which is a great track. It's one of my favourites. it was one of my first championships that I ever played. The Irish closed there in 2017, I think, to Alex Gleeson when I shot millions. TJ Ford just reminded me there the other day, 81-86 or something like that. But it's a serious test, and we 100% we'll get an amazing field. We'll get lads from all over Europe as well as Asia, and hopefully we can get some Americans over. We were chatting to myself and Matt. We're chatting to a few at the Western Am and US Am who said they'd love to go and play St Andrews and then the British Open. So. It's brilliant for Ballyliffin and Donegal and Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned there, like all the lads you're chatting to about how great our golf courses are. Like, does that just kind of show how important, you know, word of mouth is, that you can actually get, you know, such high quality players to come and play in championships in this country?
Yeah, it's just the history of it, isn't it? I mean, you look at Lange, 18 something. Going on till that's going to get a great field. Obviously, you're going to have the Palmer Cup there, and then you're going to have a Walker Cup there in 26. We were saying it, like, we imagined the 25 and 26 South could be brilliant fields, and deservedly so. And that's, you know, I don't know who gets those things over the line, who gets the Walker Cup to Le Hinch or the amateur to Ballyliffin, but. It's brilliant to have that history and golf history, and Ireland's such a brilliant country for the history of golf, and hopefully just keeps promoting Irish golfers to succeed, because obviously there's been like a little bit of a gap there for a while on tour, but there's no shortage of history. And as long as we keep those championships and those venues, and I don't see why not. You know, that we can't get more and more people up through the game and onto the tour.
So that was Hugh Foley chatting to us there earlier on in the week. Mark, what did you make of that?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, fair play to Hugh. He's a great supporter of all the championships. He's like, he goes and plays and all that he can. I mean, like, as a former winner of virtually all of them at this point, as he was talking about, it's great that he's going to be down again. Interestingly, I was actually talking to Mrs. Arnold that he was talking about, that he's staying with there. I was down at the driving range the other day, and she had her young son down there, and the young lad, he's only a beginner golfer or whatever, but even though Sean Keelan and Patrick Keelan are his cousins, like, he was talking about, like, he was so excited about the fact that Hugh Foley was going to be coming down and staying with them, and that he was going to get to go out and follow Hugh around the golf course. And he did mention that he was going to be caddying for him, but I think his mother quickly put cold water on that idea. I think the bag would be bigger than himself. But like Hugh said, things didn't pan out the way that he had hoped. But I mean, it's great to see that he's putting the shoulder back to the wheel again, and he's gonna be dead set on, you know, righting the wrongs, you could say, that kind of cropped up last year.
Yeah, and Hugh will be obviously one of the favourites. He's playing in the feature group, I suppose you could call it, with local man TJ Ford and Walker Cooper and Matthew McLean. A couple of other big names in the field, Peter O'Keefe, Bridgestone Order of Merit winner David Sheil. You've got Keith Egan, you've South of Ireland champion Collie Campbell, you've Jack McDonald, who's a regular at the top of leaderboards in Irish events. Can this week be his week, perhaps? You've got other lads, you've got Shane McDermott, probably the big name in the qualifier, Jake Whelan's playing, like, you've got a lot of decent names there. It's a decent field. It's probably not the greatest field in the world, Mark. Not as good as last year. James Fox as well, North of Ireland champion. So, like, it's grand. It'll be a good week. You just mentioned Hugh Foley there having a caddy. He genuinely does like to bring a caddy with him. So you might want to get your ear in there, Mark. Get a word in. So you can, loop the bag for a couple of days. Are you looking forward to the week? I know you're going to be there pretty much all day, every day, I'd imagine. Like, you went last year. What was it like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great week down here. I mean, the club really embrace the week. I mean, it's a big, like, you have the qualifier Wednesday, practice day Thursday, and then the tournament runs Friday through Tuesday. So, like, there's a lot of time that, you know, the golf course is not available for the members to play, but like the membership embrace the tournament in a way that you kind of rarely see anywhere else. Like, there's so many of them will be working like on a voluntary basis. I remember, like, last year at the end of one of the days while I was in the I was sitting up in the members bar tapping out my reports, and you just see like a fleet of about, there was like 40 or 50 members all gathered and all went out like doing like divot work on the golf course and everything. And as we talked about, like the weather was pretty horrific last year. Like, so to see that many people willing to go out and get soaked, just to refill divots and everything, it's quite incredible. But it's a huge thing for the area as well. I know, like, so David O'Donovan, the general manager, has spoken a lot about like how many people from the area return, you know, on Easter weekend to go to the tournament. You know, it's become like a sort of like an annual pilgrimage home. And like, I've spoken to so many people from around here that don't necessarily play golf, that aren't involved in the club in any way, but they all talk about the West of Ireland. They all go out and watch it, and so many of them have, they talk about memories of watching, you know, a 15-year-old Rory McIlroy playing there, and you know, it could be one of those ones where like everybody, you know, everybody claims they saw it, even though they maybe didn't. But yeah, it's a great tournament for the area, great tournament for the golf club, and yeah, I'm seriously looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a brilliant week for everyone down in Sligo, and you mentioned there the community spirit, which I suppose is really what amateur golf is all about, embracing the event and everybody willing to give 100% just to help in any way at all. Like TJ Ford, local man there, former South of Ireland winner, he spoke about, you know, going around getting towels signed by like the likes of Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry when they were youngsters, going out and caddying. Now he's playing in it and he really, really wants to win it. Like, it's his major championship. It's always on at a special time of year as well. And plenty of memories, I'm sure, in the clubhouse of, you know, watching the West in the afternoon and sticking around to watch the Masters in the evening. Won't quite happen this week, but no, it's just a really, really special event. And it's brilliant that it kicks off the Irish amateur season. Just a quick one, Mark. The last couple of years, we've seen the format played in 54 holes of stroke play, with the top 16 going through to the match play or the knockout stages. It's back to the traditional format this year of 36 holes of stroke play, with the top 64 going into the match play. And we ran a poll on our social channels a few weeks back when Golf Ireland announced this, and I think over 90% voted in favour of the change. And a lot of players have been given the thumbs up as well. Like Colly Campbell said, the reason he hadn't played in it in the last couple of years was because the format wasn't what he wanted to be. What do you think of the format change? Are you for or against?
Well, I mean, I can see both sides of it. I can see, like, I think the reason why they tried with the 54-hole stroke play is because we see so many of the international amateur tournaments, and you know, once you get to like, once you sort of like break into professional ranks, it's all stroke play. So trying to perhaps better prepare some of the, like the leading amateurs for that transition, or maybe for the international competition, or that transition into the professional ranks, like the additional round of stroke play was probably beneficial in that regard. But at the same time, like 50 or 54 holes with only 16 players advancing, I think it's a little bit too cutthroat. Having 64 advance now, it's going to make it much more of an exciting spectacle for for supporters. And I mean, like last year, I guess you had a lot of guys coming out to play their third round, knowing that there's no chance that they're going to break into the top 16. They're too far back, so like, they're effectively playing for very little. You had a few players withdrew in that scenario, and I mean, yeah. Look, I think it's a much better format as a spectacle, and I can understand exactly why the players prefer it this way. But I also, like I said, I understand the logic behind trying it. And look, you got to give your or tip your hat to, you know, to Golf Ireland for trying it. Look, it's turned out that it probably hasn't worked, and they've decided to go back. But props to them for trying it at least.
Very much on the fence there, Mark. No, look, I'm in favour of the format going back to the traditional way. I just think I agree with you there. Like the 54 holes and top 16, like if you no hope making the top 16, if you're, you know, struggling, you're going to go out on a really horrible, horrible day. There's also the cost element as well. Like you're going to have to book an extra night just to have no real chance of qualifying. Whereas you could have two really, really bad days. Then all of a sudden, you know, one good round could pop you to that 64th and final spot. And I think 64 players playing match play opens it up for, you know, a lot of upsets. Like I remember the first time I went to actually cover the West, you know, Alan Hill was in Maynooth University, still is. He beat a load of former winners. He beat Keelan Rafferty. He beat Hugh Foley as well, who we were talking about, on his way to the semi-final. And of course, probably the greatest story of Irish amateur golf in the last couple of years for sure was Quinton Carew, 64th qualifier at the Irish Close, went on to win the whole thing. Like, so it just shows you like there can be a fairy tale story hidden in those 64 players that maybe you wouldn't get with the top 16.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And well, I did, you've accused me of sitting on the fence there. I did say I was in favour of it. I said I could see why they tried it. But no, I do come down one side of the fence. I am in favour of it going back to 64.
You're in bounds as far as we're concerned
and
there.
And as well for spectators, you know, it's every single match that's out there, every group you're watching, like, you know, you can tell exactly what's happening, what's the state of the match. If you're just out there and you're kind of like randomly watching groups go past, like you may not have any idea who you're watching or where they stand in the tournament or anything, but like every individual hole matters obviously in a match play thing. So you can stand there in the same hole and watch 10 groups coming through, and you know, like every single hole is significant in that. You can take a match and follow it all the way to the end, and you're not worried about, you know, the fact that maybe somebody's shooting a low score out there and you're not seeing that, you know, because the match that you are following has like huge significance in itself. So from a spectator's point of view, absolutely, it's the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And just scrolling down to the field, I know I mentioned it was a decent field, but it's probably not one of the stronger ones for the West this year. Just a couple of little things. We had a lot of top players who've, you know, gone on to turn pro, like Rob Moore and Mark Power, Alex Maguire. Rob Brazel, I know, was preparing for Sunshine Tour Q School, so probably a few days out in the wind and rain wouldn't be the ideal preparation for that. We're also missing quite a strong Maynooth contingent with the R&A Student Tour Series finale at St Andrews taking place this week as well. So we've got we would have had, you know, the likes of Alex King, Alan Hill, David Kitt, Owen Murphy, Owen Sullivan, Jack Hearn, of course, a big player on the scene, Liam Abom, Ryan Griffin, of course, would have been one of the favourites, maybe get a top 10 there, Simon Walker. Incidentally, Ryan Griffin tops the order of merit going into the final event, as was Kate Lanigan in the women's section, and the leaders after the final event of the season will get Palmer Cup places. So it's probably a shame with the clash. I mean, we raised that issue with Golf Ireland at their media day last week, and sometimes there's just nothing you can do about it, but just shows like we got great depths in both events, I suppose, this week.
Yeah, I mean, look, the West of Ireland's always held over Easter weekend. So, I mean, as we all know, Easter dates change year to year. So it is unfortunate in that regard. I mean, you've also got with the defending champion, James Claridge from England, isn't going to be back. He's also the defending champion at the Berkhamsted Trophy, which starts in England. I think this is the day after. The day after the West of Ireland, so he's gonna play in that one instead. And considering how wet and windy it was here last year, you probably wouldn't really blame him for deciding he'll stay closer to home. But yeah, and it's unfortunate. But as you said, look, some things you just can't legislate for. It's, you know, you either stick with the Easter weekend or you try and shift around in the schedule. And I think moving it from the Easter weekend would take away so many different aspects of the tournament. Like I said, we talked about a lot of the support, the tradition around here in Sligo about the Easter weekend dates. Yeah, look, sometimes just something's got to give, and unfortunately it's not as strong a field as we could be. But at the same time, you reeled off a load of names there earlier on. We've added to that, I mean, you've got Barry Anderson, who's West 2017 West of Ireland champion, and got to the final last year. Barry's a County Sligo man himself, even though he's living in Cork these days. He's playing in it. You've got the ageless Joe Lyons. Hope if Joe's another former West of Ireland winner, made it into the top 16 last year. So even though you can list off a lot of names that aren't here, like, there are more than enough players in the field to make this a really, really good championship all the same.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you there, and I'm sure you'll have an absolute ball, Mark. I hope it rains. I hope it's absolutely freezing. I'll be sitting in the comfort of my own home, reading your reports and looking at some of the videos you're going to be putting up. Just on to round up.
Sorry, before you get there, I went out. I played on Saturday. We were up like first group off in the morning. It was like 40 mile an hour winds, and we were halfway up the first. It was kind of one of those mornings where you woke up and you were kind of like, everybody in the group was waiting for somebody else in the group to send the text saying, let's call this off. But none of us wanted to be that guy, even though we all wished somebody was that guy. But anyway, we were like halfway up the first, and it started to hailstorm, and like the hailstones were just hitting you like bullets. But we soldiered on, didn't play the full 18, but we played most of them. But I think every single one of us were thinking, like, just praying to God, please let the weather be better than this next weekend.
Yeah. Well, look, you'll have to touch wood and do a lot more things to guarantee that. It's Scratch Cup season this time of year. We had a couple over the weekend. The cut-off point for the Laytown Bettytown Scratch Cup was +1.9. So for anyone who, you know, went around to watch that, I'm sure the standard was unbelievable. It was won by Keelan Rafferty. I mean, you might as well give this fella the trophy at this stage. Won it in 2022, beaten in the playoff by Richard Knightley in 2023. And he shot a second round of 65 to win for the second time. He trailed on 11 under par, sorry. He trailed by one after a morning 66. And he was bogey free in his second round, won by three shots from Kevin LeBlanc in second. He had 10 birdies and an eagle across his 36 holes, with one bogey coming on the par 4-6 in round one. Played his last 27 holes in 11 under par as well. And then Edmonstown's Anna A. Baum was the last woman standing in the Royal County Down Ladies Scratch Cup. She carried rounds of 75 and 79 to win by a slender margin of one shot on two over par. And then just tipping across the water to the States, Sarah Byrne, playing in her last regular season event as a collegiate player from Miami in the Clemson Invitational, had a top five finish. Just seems like every day, every week, we're putting out good news articles about Sarah Byrne.
Yeah, I mean, she was named golfer of the month for for February, which is the second time she's achieved that award this year. I think it's the first time anybody's ever been named it twice in the same year, twice in the same college year. So yeah, I mean, she just continues to go from strength to strength. Not sure with Sarah. I think this is her second year that she's finishing now. So I mean, another 2 years of sort of like honing her skills on the collegiate circuit, and I mean, she looks a shoe in to progress to the professional ranks and like immediately start making waves.
Yeah, hopefully is right. Good to see the women's game in Ireland getting stronger anyway, like a great cohort of top amateurs coming behind the likes of Lauren Walsh and Olivia Mahaffey. So hopefully Leona and Stephanie will have company on the LPGA Tour over the next 5 to 10 years. Mark, before we wrap things up, I just wanted to let you know that you mentioned you were having your coffee and you were banging out the reports in the members bar last year. You may get in touch with Golf Ireland and see how they let you into the press room this year, because there is a press room. You don't have to slum it up there with all the public.
Hey, I'm a man of the people. I like the sweat and the sound of food and cutlery and pints getting pulled and maybe the odd pint getting dropped down to me. You know, those are the things you don't get when you're in the press room.
No, definitely not. If anyone's there this week and sees Merrick, you might drop him down a nice old pint. It'll have to be 0-0 though, because you've got what, 10-12 reports to write daily, Merrick. That's what I'm expecting.
Well, I'm a man who works best when I've got a little bit of a buzz on.
Don't we all? Brilliant. Mark, thanks very much for joining me today. And look, I hope the rain stays away for you this week, and I hope you get on really, really well. Anyone can check out irishgolfer.ie. You can check out our social channels for the reports, and I'm sure Mark will do plenty of photography and a little bit of video as well. So thanks everybody for joining us today. I hope we didn't bore you for too long, and we'll be back to the usual three ball hopefully next week, if not in a couple of weeks. Thanks a mil. We'll